This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we'll have conversations with Indiana political scientist, speaker, and writer Morton Marcus about some of his Eye on the Pie columns and how they fit in with our economy here in the Hoosier State. Donna Stuckert with Porter County Recycling and Waste Production also joins us to bring us up to date on composting programs and how all those leftover pumpkins, gourds, and leaves from the Halloween season can make some great compost and more. Congressman Pete Biskoski will also join us as well to bring us up to date on what's happening on Capitol Hill, and we'll also bring you up to date as well, too, with another story from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. That and more coming up. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. We haven't checked in for a while with noted Indiana economist, writer, and speaker Morton Marcus to check into his Eye on the Pie columns that are available to check out. And we have him with us from his office in Indianapolis. Morton, thanks for being with us today.
Well, I'm glad that I have the right kind of pajamas so I can get the right kind of sleep.
Before our conversation, for folks that didn't hear we had one of the underwrites from the NPR newscast talk about pajamas that you can get with different characters, in particular with dogs and cats and stuff from Charlie Brown on there too. It's something to look at. Where else in America can you expect to find something as interesting as that you can pick up for somebody for a Christmas present this year, right?
Oh, I tell you, you do commercials so well.
Well, let's talk about some of the great Eye on the Pie columns here. You put out a couple here in October that are of note here in particular. There are two of them, and they come out every week. And we're talking about here about a couple weeks in a row, first one dealing with Indiana's economic success, and then what you talk about, a limited county economic success. Break us down, if you will, and tell us the thoughts behind the one involving the entire state's economic success.
Well, what we very often look at are just two things. Most politicians and economic developers are directed by their boards to look at the two items in particular, number of jobs and the average wage per job. And that's what I was trying to look at in these columns and see how we do. Indiana doesn't fare too well. I'm going to do this off the top of my head, but I think we come out somewhere in the neighborhood of 47th or 48th on those two indicators. So there are only a few states that are below us on those rankings.
And then you break it down as you talk in more detail. But you mentioned about it being 47th in the nation as far as adding jobs. How do the counties in Indiana seem to fare? Do we have some in certain regions that do better than others?
Well, without question. But doing better in number of jobs may not mean very much if they're low-wage jobs. Let me give you an example of that. Hendricks County, which is just west of Marion County, is the Indianapolis area. That county has added a lot of jobs, but it actually found that its wages per job went down. And you say, well, how can that be? Well, if you add a lot of jobs that are low-paying jobs, because you're adding a lot of fast food restaurants and other places, warehousing that just don't pay as much as the jobs that used to be in that area, more dominating kinds of jobs. Then what happens is your wage level falls. It's not because people are being paid less; it's because you have more people who are paid less.
Well, you talk about jobs and about the fact that we have in many areas, and we know that the job rates change dramatically in some places. I think Lake County is one of those where it found an increase in jobs and changes. But here again, you should say it depends on the type of job in particular. We always talk about the economic values of education and getting the right kind of education. And I know you had a column talking about, in fact, it was entitled Preparing for the Future. That's a very important one that we need to find a way to get the word across to let people know that it is important, and in particular the young people, to be sure that you start out in life in your working careers with the right kind of education.
Well, the right kind of education is being able to learn. And being able to learn starts with being able to read and then being able to read a lot of different kinds of things. If all you can read are the sports pages, you may be very adept at understanding batting averages and field goal percentages, but you might have trouble with other things that if we had a science page in the newspaper, you might not be able to figure it out. And many of the things that are on NPR require that you have an ability to learn, because so much good material is being offered to you on radio programs, and a lot of people just can't grasp what's being said, so they turn away from it. The ability to learn, regardless of age, is an extremely important skill, and we don't really focus on that too much. And it all starts with reading.
Let's jump back to mid-September to one of your Eye on Pie columns. We hadn't had a chance to ask you really very much about the efforts that Hoosier communities, in particular the city of Gary and Indianapolis and other places, have made in doing their best to put in their bid for the Amazon second headquarters that's planned. And one column in particular that you mentioned, you kind of entitled it "An Amazing and Decent Proposal." What do you mean by that? That's intriguing just to read the headline.
Well, there are a lot of cities that are willing to give away a great deal. I have to admit that I thought that Mayor Freeman Wilson of Gary did a splendid thing with her ad in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. What she did was she made an announcement to the entire country of people who look at the New York Times, that Gary is a place that should be considered for business expansion and business development. She's gotten nationwide attention by doing that. And a lot of people scoff at this and they say, oh, what value is that? It's not going to bring Amazon. No, it may not bring Amazon, but that ad in and of itself caught the attention of probably millions of people around the country, because it was added, it was regarded so much, and I think that was an absolutely brilliant expenditure of economic development money, was to run that ad. The Amazon situation is sort of like the rodeo. Here's this bull is charging into the ring, and that bull is named Amazon. And then you've got these various people who are going to come in, and they're going to challenge the bull, and they're going to show it their particular red cape, all in the hope of being able to defeat this bull. Most of them will hop out of the ring once the Amazon folks really start stamping their feet and making a charge, because they really don't have that much to show. Mm-hmm. I think that the Chicago area, the Indianapolis area, other parts of our state of Indiana have some very good sites. But again, that even if Amazon doesn't come here, it's worth getting the attention of site developers all over the country that they're going to get because of being in that particular ring with the Amazon bull.
And one of your former colleagues, I guess, actually, who is still working for Indiana University Northwest, Micah Pollack, was with us not long ago talking about this in particular, and talking about the fact that regardless of what happens in the city of Gary, if it is even in the city of Chicago, there will be some benefits that come across the state line, and it's always worth the try. You never know unless you try.
Well, that is part of it, but that's also the kind of slogan that they use for the lottery. And I wouldn't want to be encouraging anyone to get involved with the lottery. Now, to me, what's important here is getting the attention of site selectors about the assets that you have. And, yes, there is certainly worth trying because it's sort of like putting on your best clothes when you go out on a date. You want to look as good as possible. That's for both genders, or even for those who haven't decided on their gender yet.
Right. We're talking with Indiana economist, writer, and speaker Morton Marcus about some of his Eye on the Pie columns that are available to check out as well online. One of the columns you had recently, going back to October again, is one that one of the characters that you like to turn to help explain things, at least someone to, I guess, you can play off as you're writing, is the character that's known as Fay of the Forest, a sprite sitting on the rail of the deck overlooking the trees in the creek there at your home.
Yeah.
And taking a look at and how the local assets seem to be the real part of the future.
That, I think, is extremely important. I was impressed when I was listening to some folks from Hobart talk about their plans for Lake George. Lake George is one of the great assets that that Hobart has. And in the past, they have sort of turned their back on Lake George. You know, you drive down Main Street there in Hobart, and what you see is the front of some old buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, behind those buildings, on the west side of the street, sits Lake George, which is very pretty, very nice to look at. Mm-hmm. You'll excuse my dog who gets excited when someone comes to the door. But I think that's a great, absolutely great situation for Hobart to look at what's its great assets and how do they make something out of that. And you have the same kind of situation with Highland.
Mm-hmm.
Highland's council recently moved forward on a proposal to work on the trees that line so many of the streets in Hobart and make, not Hobart, in Highland,
right,
and make Highland such a desirable community. So I think that again, those trees are an asset. Now, it doesn't mean that every house on that street is an asset, but certainly keeping those beautiful trees and keeping the beautiful vista that that's there should be maintained. And this is what I mean by using the assets that you have. And one of the things that many people have suggested, going back to the Amazon situation, is that communities, instead of offering money to Amazon, say we will put that money into improving the assets that we have that are important to making this a good community.
Well, maybe that's definitely going to be the case. It all comes down to the quality of life, and we always want to have a better life, enjoy the time that we spend. We don't want to have to be working all the time, but if we do have time after work or on weekends, we want to be able to enjoy what's out there, and that's one way to be able to certainly take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
One other column that we want to touch on while we have left some time, Morton, is to talk about one of the most recent one here, is talking about, I guess, we talk about the quality of life and we talk about our families and how important it is that we make it as nice for our families as we can by where we live and what we do. And you talk about one in particular where I guess it's time to, I guess, take a look at what your youngsters want to look at when they're growing up, and when they become old enough to leave home, you want to give them a good place to be able to live as well, too.
Well, you want them to have the skills and the capability of living well. You know, so many people say, oh, it's a shame that my children have moved away. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Certainly it's better than having them live in the basement. And people lament this, and they say, we put our tax money into their education, and then these young people move away. Well, what is it that you want? Don't you want something good for these young people? Don't you want them to do well? This, to me, is a great joy to parents and their neighbors to know that they have prepared young people to do well wherever they live.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I have often said that the high school in each community is the most important economic development tool that we have. Build and maintain and staff good high schools. That's what is really important. And
and we don't do enough of that.
And that's why it's very important for, of all places, the school city of Hammond. That's why they're going to their voters. The school district officials are asking for support to be able to build a new high school in Hammond to replace one that's very old and needs to be replaced. And they're hoping that they'll have some success when the special election is finished tomorrow night and have a chance to be able to say, hey, we've got the authority to go ahead and seek the funding or to at least initiate the funding to be able to replace the high school with a new building and consolidate classes and look for the future and here again build something better for the residents of Hammond, to be sure.
We've been
talking with North Indiana economic experts as well as a writer and a speaker, Morton Marcus. We saved back some of his Buy on the Pie columns and have a chance to chat with him about them, and we'll save another bunch and hope to talk to you again real soon, Morton.
Thank you, Chris. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye now. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, we've had Halloween pass us by now and have all the leftover pumpkins and gourds and other things that we've had out for display or maybe the jack-o'-lantern that's been carved up. And if it hasn't already turned into an ugly old man by shrinking, as they often do, by having even sitting outside in chilly weather, we still have that leftover pumpkin and those leftover gourds. And not to mention the leaves that we have to rake up now, too. Trees are starting to change the color and they'll be leaving if they haven't already started to fall in your neighborhood. They will be soon. And all of this makes great compost. Well, if you live in Porter County, there's one way to be able to deal with that. That's what the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District is all about. And with us is Donna Stuckert at the district offices in Valparaiso to talk about composting and the right things to do as well. Donna, thank you as always for joining us today.
You're welcome, Chris.
Well, let's talk about the leftovers from Halloween, I guess. It's all out there. I mean, maybe it's already been thrown in your compost pile if you have one, or if you've been contemplating putting it together with the other compostable materials. Where can residents in Porter County deal with that?
Yeah, a friendly reminder that the pumpkins and gourds and leaves, and how about those mums you have on your porch? Cold weather is hitting us already. They're all shriveling up and dying. And if residents don't backyard compost, just a reminder that they can bring it to either one of the public access compost sites in Porter County. And one of them is the Valparaiso compost site, and the other one is the Boone Grove compost site. So if you come during operating hours and drop off all of your organic waste from the holiday, we'd be happy to take it and mix it in with the compost windrows, and it'll be great soil or fertilizer, right, for the upcoming growing season next year.
For those who are not familiar where the composting sites are located, the Valparaiso sites at 2150 West Lincoln Way and the Boone Grove composting sites at 546 South County Road 400 West. For people who are maybe familiar with, they've heard about compost operations, but tell us what the you folks in Porter County do, how you collect things, and what's done with it, and as a result, the end result of the compost when it finally turns into good material.
Well, that's right. Well, we take those organic materials, and during the season, they wither down and they become great organic fertilizer, and it's free to all Porter County residents. So they can come there with their buckets and their shovels and take as much as they want, as well as they can drop off branches and logs and such. And those will be either chipped into mulch, or the logs will be available to residents as firewood. So people can come and take as much as they want for that. All of that is free. So residents can drop off and they can pick up as well.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we have a couple of recycling opportunities that are available at the sites. For instance, people can bring their household batteries to either site, or their electronics, like their old computers and their televisions and anything with an electrical cord or run by batteries, they can bring those to the compost sites and we will recycle them responsibly. Fluorescent light bulbs, toner cartridges, and old media like CDs and DVDs, they can bring all that stuff there and we'll take it off their hands.
I understand that we're not far away from being able to celebrate America Recycles Day for 2017. Explain what America Recycles Day is all about, and the fact that there are a lot of people in Porter County, young people in particular, who have decided to draw something interesting, and they had a chance to have their artwork judged, and it'll be on display.
Yeah, well, America Recycles Day is really the only day out of the year dedicated to shining a light on recycling. And so we decided that we're going to celebrate it all month. And earlier in the school year, we asked middle school students to create artwork to help encourage people to recycle shine a light on recycling in general. So they submitted their artwork, and we have three winners. Actually, as we all know, they're all winners. Everybody did a really great job. But we have three that are running on billboards throughout Porter County for the month. So they're bright, they're beautiful, and we hope people enjoy them. And if they'd like to see all the artwork that was submitted for the contest, that is all available on PorterCountyRecycling.org, and that is our website.
Now, for folks that may be driving around Porter County, and they might see the billboards, and maybe want to catch some of these artwork that's up there, will you go down the list? We've already gotten started here into the month of November, but for the rest of the month of November, where these are going to be visible and where people can check out.
Sure. Well, starting today and through the 12th, the billboards will be on the south side of US 30, east of State Road 2. Now, remember, these are the electronic billboards, so they're going to go through a bunch of different ads before they might even get to, or before they get to our recycling ads.
Right.
Now, November 13th through the 19th, they're going to be on the north side of US 30, east of Joliet. And then on November 20th through 26th, they're going to be on the east side of State Road 2, just 1 mile south of US 30. So take a drive by and take a look at what these students have done.
It's very important to be able to get young people involved, of course, in recycling. And I guess America Recycles Day is a great way to get them started if they've never done this before.
Exactly.
Now, going through the list of the projects that have been underway through the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District, one of the things that we haven't talked about lately that people can take advantage of if they're interested is the Master Recycler Project. Tell us about the program, what the benefit that they, as an average citizen in Porter County, can get if they've never done this before and they might be interested in being a better environmental steward, so to speak.
Exactly. We started this program in 2014. And we just recently graduated the sixth class of Master Recyclers, so we had 13 residents go through this comprehensive program. And it's all about waste reduction. We talk about recycling. We talk about landfills. We talk about composting and vermicomposting. And we talk about large-scale composting, what happens at the Valparaiso compost site and the Boone Grove compost site. And the real interesting and thing about this class is we go on field trips. So the students get to see up close and personal what happens to their recyclables when they leave the curb,
mm-hmm.
or what happens to their trash, you know, once it goes to a landfill. What happens there, and how are landfills operated? And in addition, we were very lucky enough to go to Metro Recycling so we can see what the private business does, private recycling business, and what they do. And also Pratt Industries participate in, and as you know, they create 100% recycled corrugated. So we get to go in and see what happens to the bales of paper and cardboard that come in. And this was collected from people's curbside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that comes in to Pratt, and then they create the corrugated out of that. So we get to see how that process works. So it's a great program for people that want to learn more about reducing waste in Porter County. And, of course, they get to volunteer for 30 hours, and they can help us educate others on recycling as well during that process.
Now, if anybody's interested in getting involved in the Master Recycler Program, Donna, how can they do that?
They can go to our website, PorterCountyRecycling.org. And right now we have an interest page set up, so we don't have the next class set up as of yet. But if they are interested in taking the next class, they can give us their information, and they will be the first contacted when we have that scheduled.
That's great. Donna Stuckert is with Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction, filling us in on some of the programs underway during these autumn months. And as always, Donna, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
Thank you. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Let's check in with First District Congressman Pete Visklosky to find out what's happening in Washington that affects us here in Northwest Indiana. Congressman, thanks for being with us on Regionally Speaking today.
I appreciate the opportunity very much, Chris.
Let's go down the list here. First, let's get your views. You've had a chance, I think, to get at least a brief look at what the Trump administration is proposing for the tax reform bill. I know it's going through the public hearing process pretty soon before you actually get a chance to take on the measure on the House of Representatives floor. But give us your views on what you have seen so far and what we've heard about the measure so far and what kind of impact it's going to have on Northwest Indiana residents.
Well, Chris, I have a concern in that 2 weeks ago, the House and Senate approved a budget resolution for the coming year. And that budget resolution essentially made room for an increase of the deficit by $1.5 trillion in order to make way for the tax legislation. So while many people refer to the legislation that was introduced last week as tax reform, I would respectfully characterize it as a massive tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible, while you and I talk today, to determine what will ultimately happen. I do believe some tax legislation will pass. I do not know when, and I do not know what the size of it will be. But the tax cut will be somewhere between zero and $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Your question is, what will it mean for taxpayers in Northwest Indiana? That remains to be seen based on what the final elements of the bill will be. But clearly, there is a corporate tendency in this legislation as far as repatriation of dollars that corporations have parked overseas to avoid paying tax on it. But there are other elements in the bill that eliminate credits for people who would like to adopt a child, which I think is a very good public purpose. As we know, there is a crisis with young and not-so-young people owing money on student loans. The bill would eliminate the opportunity to deduct that from your taxes. So also have concern with the priorities within the legislation as it has been produced. My ultimate position, and again, until you see it in its final form, I would not say I'm yes or no,
right,
is that, one, I do not want to add to the deficit to impose greater costs on the next generation for the benefit of this one. And secondly, I would like to see more equity in the tax code. But I don't see how that is contained in the measure today if we're hurting people who have student loans. We're hurting people who want to adopt a child, as opposed to those who have been avoiding for years paying taxes on corporate profits by keeping them overseas and not investing them in our economy.
I also know, too, that at least some of the discussion has mentioned so far that there would be proposed changes that would make an impact as well on what local taxes, property taxes in particular, that we would get to pay, would be able to deduct as a deduction from our tax bill as well, too. But that's not clear as to whether that's going to be one of the measures that will be approved, too, I understand.
You're absolutely right, and it's very contentious, and there's a theory, a public policy theory, that you not essentially tax people who are already paying a tax to their state and local governments. I mean, there's just been a fundamental policy for a long period of time that should not be done. You obviously, in cases like this, then have the very practical application that people are paying these taxes. It is a benefit to states and municipalities that they not be double taxed, and there will be a great deal of pushback, particularly from states such as Illinois, New York, New Jersey, where they have, compared to our state, very, very high rates of taxes. But nevertheless, if you're paying a state or local tax, this bill also will have a negative impact on you. It is controversial, and you're right to question whether it makes the final bill.
Mm-hmm. One of the other measures I know that has come up that you've talked about since you're a member of the Congressional Steel Caucus is asking President Trump and the Trump administration to finish work on looking into the issue of steel imports that we've been facing for quite a few years, that many of these imports have come from China, and now we know from other countries as well, too. What's the status we know right now on how the investigation is coming along?
At this point, there is not a specific date as far as the conclusion of that investigation, although we anticipate it will be by the first part of this coming year. The caucus has continued to communicate with the president as well as the administration, indicating that this is an important issue. We want all deliberate speed made and a very careful determination reached. So we have remained in a communication with the administration on this. The administration has continued to maintain a non-market economy status for China. That's a positive development. And looking ahead to the next week, we'll find myself testifying before the International Trade Commission on November 16th involving steel wire rod cases. So not just myself, but the entire caucus in a bipartisan fashion continues to be active, and as you point out, particularly on the Section 232 investigation.
I was wondering, because we know that President Trump is currently overseas over in China. He's in Japan right now, but one of his stops he's going to make is China, and I wonder if he's going to maybe possibly bring up this the comments, the concerns about the steel imports that are still making their way out of China to the United States.
Well, I would certainly hope when he reaches China on Wednesday that that is part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. And again, we simply want to ensure that all countries abide by basic international trading norms, so it is a fair competition for American workers. Today, the Chinese export their unemployment to the United States of America principally, but other countries as well, and Americans lose their job. That is wrong, and that's what we're fighting against.
We're talking with our Northwest Indiana Congressman, Pete Visglosky, in Washington about some of the issues that he's facing not only on Capitol Hill but elsewhere in the government. Congressman Visglosky, I know that you've been a very, very big supporter of veterans, and there are a number of bills that you've had passed, and you've supported dealing with veterans' benefits, in particular trying to make sure that veterans' health care problems are cleared up. How do things stand right now as you see how the Secretary of Veterans Affairs is doing in trying to deal with these issues of veterans who still seem to be stuck on these long wait lists when they get into the healthcare system?
They really are. And one of the things that we've been very focused on the Appropriations Committee is making sure there are enough funds that are provided for health care. In the end, as we all know, money isn't the ultimate solution. You need to make sure you have good management, responsive employees as well. But funding is part of that issue. I would point out that in the last fiscal year for veterans' health care programs specifically, we allocated $52.8 billion. In the House-approved appropriations bill that has not yet been signed into law, we have increased that figure to $69 billion. The Senate committee, and while the House has acted on this bill, the Senate has not yet, is at $70.1 billion. So my anticipation is that patients has long run out. People who have put on their uniform, risked their lives, giving us the time of their lives, should be treated, first of all, with respect. Secondly, the best health care possible, and then timely service. We continue to press that, not just, again, from the budgetary standpoint, although that's where my primary responsibility means, mm-hmm. but also in continuing to encourage better management and more responsive care by the VA.
Now, Congressman, we have a chance to talk about some pretty serious issues here. Let's talk about one that's near and dear to all of our hearts here in Northwest Indiana. I know yours in particular. You get a chance on the floor of the House to hear your colleagues throw their unanimous support behind a measure that you've sponsored that would in turn designate the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as an official national park. That's got to feel pretty good.
I do feel very good, and what I feel very good about is the fact that we had unanimous support in the House by all of the Indiana delegation of both parties. Also is strongly supported by both Senator Donnelly and Senator Young in the Senate. And while we never bet on the legislative process, certainly given the commitment of those two individuals, I'm reasonably hopeful that it will pass the Senate. As we all know, in Northwest Indiana, it is an incredible resource from a biological standpoint, recreational standpoint. It's in a population center. And the fact that all of us as taxpayers have spent money to, one, purchase the dues, to continue to preserve it, we ought to make sure by renaming it that we give it as much publicity and standing as possible so that others, whether they're U.S. citizens or visitors around the world, come to learn, come to recreate, come to simply enjoy, and in the process, I would hope, spend some money in Northwest Indiana to help our economy.
I know that we're concerned about the state of all of the national parks as we're dealing with tight financial times here, and we know the Trump administration is taking a look, very hard look at the national park system. Do you think that the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, if it comes to national park, is going to be able to continue on, escape some of the scrutiny that some of the other bigger, more populated national parks are facing?
Chris, I don't think the name change will have that impact. My concern, and we just talked about funding for veterans program, and that's a positive story. The administration has essentially asked to eviscerate the funding for many of our great resources, including our national park system. How it became a partisan issue, I will never know.
Yeah.
But because we are in that pool for those very limited and shrinking resources, it will continue to put pressure on the park service personnel and those who are responsible for maintaining and preserving that resource. The job for Superintendent Lapovitz and all of his staff are increasing in their degree of difficulty. I would hope and petition the administration to change their attitude. And again, we will be doing our best within the Appropriations Committee to turn that tide back.
Well, I know that everybody at the Dunes National Lakeshore are doing their best, being good stewards of the federal dollars they get, and they try to be careful with what they spend to be able to keep up the facility and make it not only the nicest place to be, but also to be able to accommodate all of the thousands and thousands of people that come by every single year. So let's hope for the best, I suppose, there too. Congressman Pete Visklaski, thank you for spending time with us today to talk about some of the big issues, and hope we have a chance to chat with you again soon.
Chris, thank you so much. I hope your listeners and yourself have a good week now, too.
Thank you.
I'm Renee Montaigne, and I'm a morning person. I'm at work by 12 a.m. Pacific time to get ready for Morning Edition.
I'm Robert Siegel. So while you're getting up to do Morning Edition, I'll be resting up for All Things Considered.
And when you're live on All Things Considered, I'll be sleeping. No offense.
None taken.
In-depth coverage of news that happened overnight on Morning Edition.
In-depth coverage of the day's news on All Things Considered
from NPR News.
Weekday mornings and afternoons on 89.1 FM, The Lakeshore. Listener-supported public radio.
If you want to understand this world, just follow the money. Chicken is a big business. We are a chicken nation.
In terms of a whitewater year, this is going to rank in the top five.
The running joke in Hollywood is that no movies ever make money.
Oil, of course, is the lifeblood of modern civilization.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Stories from all over the economy next time on Marketplace.
Tune in at 5:30 for Marketplace here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org.
In our series on the ports of Indiana, we've seen steel and manufacturing hubs on Lake Michigan and the Ohio River. Well, today, to wrap up the report, we go to Indiana's truest river port, Mount Vernon, which is just outside Evansville. It's the highest traffic port in the system, helping move processed grain, coal, and a lot more all around the world. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Annie Ropeek reports that it's also more susceptible than any other state port to the fallout from the shifts in federal policy.
There's one commodity at the Port of Indiana Mount Vernon you won't find anywhere else in the system. Alliance Coal spokesman Heath Lovell is showing me an 18,000-ton pile of it.
Can I touch it?
Touch what?
The coal.
Yeah. You can't just touch it. You can have it.
This pile, which is apparently small by normal standards, came from mines in Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky off trucks and trains that dumped it into pits in the ground. From there, conveyor belts carried it onto this pile or onto barges on the Ohio River to ship out to power plants.
They will take it and they'll put it through a pulverizer, and they will turn it into a fine dust, and then they take that and they blow it into the boiler, and it's just like a huge fireball, and then that heats water into steam, and that high pressure steam turns the turbine, and that's what creates electricity.
Alliance can handle up to 8 million tons of coal a year at this facility, but they aren't selling that much these days. That's why Lovell says their port space is crucial. Using water saves money, and coal needs all the help it can get to be competitive.
So if we're able to have coal be the cheapest option, then the utilities are buying coal, and one of the best ways we can do that is by making sure that we get the transportation cost as low as possible.
Mount Vernon is full of commodities tied to volatile markets, ethanol and soy biodiesel, grains and fertilizer. Steve Onan, vice president of Consolidated Grain and Barge's soybean processing plant here, says it means they're closely watching policy changes, from support for biofuels to the renegotiation of trade deals such as NAFTA, which has heavily benefited many farmers.
If those borders were closed or there were tariffs that were put into place that were harmful to agriculture, that would have a ripple effect all the way back to southern Indiana, which we do not want to happen.
Port Director Phil Wilsbacher says he always points to food to show the impact of the port and the policies affecting it.
Relating back to the everyday person who goes to the grocery store and buys a can of Jif peanut butter, you can trace it back here to soybean oil being produced at this plant.
But grain and fuels aren't all Mount Vernon handles these days. In fact, Wilsbacher says today's port is likely far beyond what state officials imagined when they built the system 40 years ago.
You know, the access to the Ohio River, it was primary, was key. But the rail service is as key. The road access is as important. And that is something that gives the port its ability to be successful as having that connectivity to all three modes.
Indiana's other ports have that connectivity too, and they've used it to attract something Mount Vernon is largely missing, a heavy steel or manufacturing base. Wilsbacher wants that to change. Mount Vernon is bigger and has more land open than the other two ports, including a parcel almost the size of all of Burns Harbor. Officials are shopping the space around to site selectors and economic developers. They've put the port's name in on a dozen different projects just this year.
The manufacturing is one area that I look to, you know, an opportunity to promote. You know, it's an ongoing discussion internally of how do we better market ourselves.
Indiana's mainstay industries could add some stability at this port in case political will ever turns against the things that helped it grow. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek in Mount Vernon.
At the State House, a committee that was tasked by lawmakers to draft new high school graduation requirements holds its final meeting tomorrow. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Eric Wendell tells us, the educators are raising concern about the proposal.
Since August, the committee has worked out a plan to give college and work-bound students more options to earn a diploma. The most recent draft calls for students to satisfy three requirements. One, earn the credits. Two, complete a project or work some type of job. And three, pass a test like the SAT or earn an industry certificate. But some local superintendents say time is needed to figure out how schools can track these new requirements. The State Board of Education will meet after Tuesday's meeting to discuss the plan. The board is expected to vote on it next month. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Weddle.
Our next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I grew up with my mom for most of my life. She was a single mom, and she's deaf. But she's the only deaf daughter of a hearing family. And so she has three siblings who are all hearing and both of her parents who can hear. I do consider myself bicultural, probably more bicultural than bilingual. A lot of times when I was little, I had to interpret for my mom between restaurant waiters and the grocery store. Every time we would go out to a restaurant, like, because I could hear, but we're all signing usually, and you could hear people talking about, like, what's wrong with that family? I wonder how they drive. I wonder how do they do anything? I wonder where they work. And my mom has her master's in education and she teaches. So, and I could hear them the whole time. Things like that would happen a lot. One thing about deaf people that people assume a lot is they don't know how to read or write, or that the old adage that deaf, dumb, and mute. My mom can communicate well. I've met countless deaf people who they can communicate. It doesn't matter that they can't hear. It's not a disability to them. It's something to be proud of, and so I think that's something everyone else can learn from, to be proud of who you are, no matter what your weaknesses might be. Because I grew up in a bicultural home, I know my culture and I know what I grew up with. Being around people with different cultures is not like a shock for me, and so maybe I don't notice it as much. I didn't grow up where everyone was the same, so I'm a very curious person. I'll always ask questions, and sometimes maybe it's dangerous, border's dangerous. I just want to learn. I care about other people, so I want to know. And so for me, it's just when I encounter something new, I just ask because I'm open about my culture experiences, and I want you to ask me because I want to talk about it. I'm going to ask you also. And then if it's silent, well, that's what I grew up with, so it's fine.
You can hear more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. Well, it's time once again for another edition of Eye on the Arts. Here's John Kane.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Phil Potempa, Marketing Director for Theater at the Center at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts in Munster. Welcome back, Phil.
Thank you, John.
So what are we going to talk about today?
We have so many wonderful opportunities for the holidays at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts and Theater at the Center. And I say wonderful because our big holiday production run is A Wonderful Life, the musical being performed.
Is this the first time that Wonderful Life is being performed?
You know, it's such a favorite story, and I think about how the movie used to be shown over and over and over, I think, before Ted Turner got his hands on it. And we have done it before, but not as much as the TV viewings have been of the classic movie. Mm-hmm. Last time was about 10 years ago, so it's time to revisit George Bailey and the family.
Absolutely. I'm sure it was a hit when it was on the stage before.
It is. Yeah. And it's, again, it's the musical telling of it, so you get the advantage of some wonderful songs, and it's a little bit of a slight change for a couple of the things in the story, but for the most part, all the favorite characters are there, including Old Man Potter and everybody else, including also Clarence getting his wings. So all those classic moments are there.
So there is a local connection?
There is, and you probably know this. You're probably just being kind to me, but the folks
I'm
that
not.
Are you're not okay. Usually, I don't get a chance to teach John Kane something, but this is a learning moment here. Everybody always thinks about our Christmas holiday movie being a Christmas story, being the only one with a connection with right. Hammond, but it's the Wonderful Life, you know, of the movie with Jimmy Stewart. Beulah Bondi, who played his mother and was so fantastic in there, she's a Valparaiso University graduate and was born and raised in Valparaiso and got her start in Little Lord Fauntleroy on the Memorial Opera House stage. So she really is an actress as our local claim to fame in Northwest Indiana and, of course, thought of by many as the mom of George Bailey in the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, I'm going to have to bone up on my Beulah Bondi.
That's right. See?
I feel like I've been shirking my duty as an arts person to... Okay, Beulah Bondi it is. I'm going to be IMDBing
That's
her.
That's it. That's my gift to you, John,
Thank
today.
Thank you so much. So who's directing this production?
The wonderful William Polinzi, who spent 10 years at Theater at the Center as artistic director. Mm-hmm. He was back last spring for that fantastic run we did of Nice Work If You Can Get It. And mm-hmm. so now we have him for the holidays, and he'll be doing what's going to be a very lavish production of A Wonderful Life, the musical.
Well, that's fantastic. Bill was a long-tenured director and the inventor of dinner theater in
that's
Chicago.
Right. Yes.
So he should do a bang-up job on this show. And you have some special holiday dinner nights?
Yeah, I just want to remind folks, because this is the time of year where people maybe only see one show a year. We hope you come and see more. But we also have this fantastic holiday buffet. It's a show package, a great price. It's two times, December the 7th and December the 15th. One-stop shopping. Come in the evening, have a wonderful buffet meal created from the Chef Trauma right there at the Performing Arts Center. And then come and see the show afterwards.
And you have a special New Year's Eve bash
yes.
too, right?
That's become a tradition for so many folks. And our New Year's Eve celebration is, once again, two performances. For the early birds that want to be in bed before the ball drops, 6 p.m. performance is going to be our salute. The Four Seasons do their salute to Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And then for the Night Owls, the 10 p.m. performance. And we're all right there to raise a glass and see in the new year.
So is that a combination of food and theater.
It is, exactly. You can do just the show only, but the dinner buffet is such a great package. Just add that on, and great price. And just, again, you're right there under one roof and no driving or worrying about parking. And again, you get home safe.
Yeah. I think my technique for dealing with the ball dropping is to set an alarm. Go to bed when I feel like it. Set an alarm for 1:45.
It's the only moment that matters.
Yeah, and then I think, ooh, whoop, whoop, it's all so exciting. And then right back to bed. What else is happening that we should know about at the Art Center?
I just want to make sure I remind everybody that we also have all these special concerts and events. And something new this year is the fact that we have Lightwire's A Very Electric Christmas. And you've seen it on all the different reality shows since America's Got Talent. And again, they're in black suits. They're illuminated with lights all over them. They do this fantastic choreographed musical performance. And it certainly will brighten up your holidays. And that's a lot of performances on the 29th of December and the 30th. So you've got performances both days, 4 performances to pick from.
That sounds interesting. A Very Electric Christmas. That's very cool. Yeah.
I can say as seen on TV.
As seen on TV.
That's right.
And now you can see it live.
That's right.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you, Phil, for being here to tell us about all of the holiday activities coming up. And we have the Festival of Trees in the lobby at the Art Center throughout December. And that's gorgeous trees that have been designed by local florists and also nonprofit organizations.
Favorite tradition.
Yeah, that's great. It makes the center a really pretty place to visit at that time of year. Okay, well, thanks for being here, Phil. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
That's John King with Eye on the Arts, talking with Phil Potempa, who's the marketing director for the theater at the center, about the upcoming It's a Wonderful Life, a musical performance, and other performances planned at the Center for the Performing Arts in Munster. You can hear this conversation and previous editions of Eye on the Arts on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. Just go on to that particular page on our homepage and click on Eye on the Arts. And tune in again next Monday for another Eye on the Arts conversation here on Regionally Speaking. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. Tomorrow on the program, we'll bring back our conversations with the two school superintendents whose school districts are involved in a special election tomorrow. Peggy Buffington, who is the superintendent for the school city of Hobart, and Walter Watkins, who is the school superintendent for the school city of Hammond, will both be with us again to talk about their referenda questions that are up before the voters in their respective cities. And a reminder that tonight, the League of Women Voters has the live forum on women in politics. It'll be held at the Crown Point Community Library. We hope you can join us for the conversation. And if not, we'll have it for you broadcast yet this week here on Lakeshore Public Radio. And on Regionally Speaking on Wednesday, we'll have a conversation with Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. We hope that you can join us for all this on Regionally Speaking and Lakeshore Public Radio.
Hi, this is Susanna.